I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Brian Burns. He's president and CEO of the Santa Fe Community Foundation. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really delighted to be here.
So your foundation, the foundation, Santa Fe Community Foundation, what does it do? It's quite an interesting organization.
Yeah, community foundations, there are about 700 of them in the United States. And they all are structured essentially alike, which is we're a place for values-driven donors and philanthropists to pool their money. And then we make grants out to the community together. The donors make grants. We make grants out to the community to support a broad range of issues. So a community foundation is really a collection of funds, and each fund represents the interests of a philanthropist.
Now, you say values-driven. Who determines those values?
The donor does, for their giving. So we work off of a belief that, giving is a powerful and transformative force, not only for the organizations that receive money, but also for the people who are giving. Giving transforms both the giver and the receiver. And so we want to engage people in the practice of generosity. And in the process there, we help people clarify what their values are. What do they want to give to? What do they want to see change in the world? What do they hope for? What's their aspiration? And through that process, develop a giving strategy. Now, many people come to us very formed, very developed as philanthropists, and they're already clear about many of the things they want to give to. And we help them find organizations that reflect their values. And other times people come to us and are really wondering, what does the community need most? Or what do I care about most? And we'll engage them in processes to help them learn about the community and its needs, to develop a leadership strategy for their giving, and help them grow the impact and even the amount of their giving over time.
Do people who come to you tend to be pretty wealthy? In other words, people come to you and say, I've got thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars to give away?
Yes, it's a broad range. Donor-advised funds, which is the vehicle that many donors use when they come to the Community Foundation, those range in size from as small as about $25,000 to, in our case, as large as $8 million. And we have everything in between. We also, though, try to engage people in the community who can give at much smaller levels. So, for example, we run the back shop in partnership with the Santa Fe New Mexican for the Empty Stocking Fund, where people can give very small amounts of money. We also provide the administrative back shop for the Dollars for Schools program, where individuals can give $25 to a local classroom. So we believe that philanthropy is for everybody, and we try to create vehicles that's appropriate for people at the level that they're interested in giving.
There are these community foundations all over the country, 700 of them. Is each one of them tied primarily to the needs of that community as opposed to sort of more national giving strategies?
Yeah, they're place-based organizations, so they're looking primarily within a certain geography for their giving, and they're trying to understand the needs of people within a certain geographic boundary. That said, we have donors who have both local and national interests. So we will facilitate giving at the local level as well as at the national level.
So, okay, somebody comes to the Santa Fe Community Foundation and says, I have $500,000. I want to give it away. What happens next?
We ask them what their interests are, what their passions are about. And that's often a very intimate and lovely conversation, because they're talking about things they learned from their parents or some values that they learned from them or grandparents, or they'll remember something growing up from their neighborhood that they feel really catapulted them into success or made their lives richer. Or they'll talk about the tragic loss of a child or a sibling, or from a disease, or they'll talk about this moment of awakening they had when they realized how deep and profound the poverty is in our community. So it's often a deep, almost kind of borderline spiritual kind of experience that people have that leads them to be generous. And what we do is try to help them articulate that better and better. And then we will engage them. What would you like to learn? And we're happy to take people out on site visits to local nonprofits and have them meet the leaders of these really courageous organizations that are trying to do good here. We'll have them, if they're data type people, we'll pull together data and information for them so that they're making data-driven decisions. So it's a broad range of ways that we engage a donor deeper and deeper into the practice of giving.
There is a kind of irony for me, and I wondered, I'm sure it's something that you've thought about, which is a lot of the problems in our society come from tremendous inequality, poor distribution of the great wealth that our country has, indeed that our community has. And yet, in order for a foundation like this to even be there, you have to have this massive wealth that comes from that very inequality.
Yeah. It's one of the amazing things about America. And, you know, the United States is the most philanthropic country in the world. So, you know, our system has created great wealth, and it also creates great generosity. And
it also creates great inequality by not distributing that wealth, which is why we rely on philanthropy. Other people actually have public schools and that work and things
right.
like that.
No, that's true. I think that one of the tensions, and hopefully it's a creative tension, is that wealth, philanthropy functions in some ways to redistribute wealth in society, as does taxes. So there are multiple mechanisms where that happens. But, what wealth is neither good nor bad. It is just a thing. Money is just a thing in the hands of people who have hearts and minds and values. And, I often say this is, it's not money that changes the world. It's the transformed human heart that changes the world. So in the hands of a person with a clear and open heart, great wealth can be a tremendously powerful and wonderful and valuable tool. And in the hands of someone whose heart is closed, it can cause great damage. And so money is neutral. It's what we do with it that matters. And so I think, where we try to hold this space where, in fact, we can bridge the huge divide between the wealthy and the poor. We're one of the few places, institutions, where I think there is space for the wealthy and the needy to meet in some way, and where we can kind of create some shared sense of making things better.
We're talking to Brian Burns of the Santa Fe Community Foundation. Let's talk about some of the actual projects that you guys are involved with.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a community foundation, we're involved in lots and lots and lots of projects. So,
some of your favorites.
Some of my favorites. I think some of the grants we've made to help the local homelessness organizations come together. We've been a real supporter of that work and the whole Pete's Pets project and the interfaith groups. What we loved about that was, of course, we have a huge unmet need. But we also saw people coming together to figure out how to leverage resources, and that's very exciting for us. Recently, one of my favorite projects has been a coalition of youth-serving organizations who came to us. They've already been meeting, and they came and said, hey, we're trying to figure out our path forward, and can you help us? And we were happy to give them a relatively small grant to help them do deep organizational assessments about their own effectiveness and their capacity and their capabilities. And they really embraced that opportunity to understand what they might do to strengthen themselves as a coalition and to not only find new efficiencies in their operating model, but also to grow together, to become stronger together, as well as create a more unified set of messages that might increase public awareness about the plight of youth in this community and potentially be more effective as advocates in the roundhouse. So that's an example of, I think, good philanthropy, where what it does is brings people together. It heals divides. It stimulates innovation and new thinking, and can take some measurable steps forward. And all change is incremental, you know, and that's one of the challenges in some ways in philanthropy is some of us would love to see big change happen overnight. And in fact, that's not how change happens. So the beauty of philanthropy is that it can be patient capital that helps organizations move incrementally down a path toward greater impact.
It's funny, if you think about it, big changes do happen overnight, but they're usually for the worse.
Yeah, like disaster.
Well, disasters, or, for example, the defunding of the public mental hospitals by Reagan, and all these people went out on the street, and we've been catching up ever since, and failing to catch up ever since. So it seems like I do find myself wondering whether if you... I mean, it's easier to destroy something than to build something, as we know. It's easier to knock down a house than to build a house. It's easier to destroy a community than rebuild it. But at the same time, one does wonder that if whether with a bunch of good minds and a bunch of money, you actually could make big changes quickly.
Yeah, with big enough money. You know, philanthropy is, even though there's... America is the most philanthropic nation in the world. We are still dwarfed by other sources of capital. The for-profit sector actually is working with, you know, trillions of dollars, as is government. We're not. So the philanthropic dollar has to be invested very strategically, very carefully, to those kind of acupuncture points, those leverage points, where you can affect other systems change. So, yes, I mean, I suppose in a theoretical world, some enormous influx of money could make a difference, but I don't think it's just about money. I think it's also about influence. So there are a couple of examples in Boston and Pittsburgh. I'll share with you those two, where public education was severely failing local students. And one of the things the Boston Foundation did was, after trying to work within the system, decided to step out of the system. And they made relatively small investments, but highly visible investments, in the creation of a parallel system of charter schools, which created competition. And over the last 10 or 15 years, that small investment has actually not only provided students with an alternative route to getting an education, but in fact has put pressure on the public school system to improve outcomes. And that's happened. In Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh Foundation, along with a couple of other private foundations, including the Heinz Foundations and others, also noticed similarly public education was failing their students. And they were making about 10% of school but spending came from philanthropy, so relatively small player, right? So what Pittsburgh and the other foundations did was decided to go very public and say, until the school system gets its act in order, we are going to pull all of our money. And they used their voice. And there's a beautiful article written about it in the Stanford Social Innovation Review. I think it's called something like Acting Boldly, where you see that a relatively small philanthropic player can have a tremendous impact by using their influence. And in fact, what happened is over the course of 18 or 24 months after the philanthropies pulled out of the public school system, new superintendents were appointed, new school board was appointed, the school district went on a turnaround process, and the philanthropies went back and reinvested. So those are just two examples, I think, of where, yeah, it'd be great if we had lots of money, but there's more in our tool chest than just money.
When you look at the Santa Fe school system and New Mexico and the way that the system is really failing our students, and I mean, I keep harping on this thing of third graders who can't read and all of that, as the governor does. I mean, I have a beautiful, sweet neighbor who is in the third grade and who really can barely read more than three-letter words. Okay, so then there's much more to it than that. There's not a kind of, I think, ultimately, love of learning that's instilled in so many of our kids, and love of reading and things like that. Okay, you look at this. What can philanthropy do, and what can be done above and beyond philanthropy as a kind of community effort, in your view?
Yeah. Well, you know, first the caveat, which is I'm not an education specialist, and there are many highly competent people around who are working on the very problem that you state. But you're absolutely right that there is a crisis of education here. And, you know, it's a systems problem. I don't think it's any single person or any single policy or any single set of values that causes that crisis. It's actually deeply complex. It's related to everything from the deep trauma that New Mexicans have experienced over its last many hundreds of years to, political agendas that are at odds, to potentially even lack of, the kind of competence we need to turn around such a complex environment. What can be done? I think most importantly, what we have to do is map the system. We have to understand deeply, in a very deep way, what are all the factors that influence academic success here? What are they? And how do we become to understand, how do we get to understand the influence that each of them have, kind of in a weighted way? What's the weighted influence? How much of it is, policy? How much of it is teacher preparedness? How much of it is parent involvement? How much is it that we have a weak infrastructure of buildings and technology? How much of it is that we don't motivate, we don't have motivating environments for students? I don't think we know that very well. I think that we are not, we're trying to apply a technical fix to a complex systems problem. And
right.
And so, I guess my question is, where do we come together to understand the system? Where is that place that is independent of political agendas and ideologies and already fixed points of view? That's one of the big problems, not only here in New Mexico, it's a huge problem in our society now. Anyway, we just decide what our mind is and we're never open to learning. So where is that place where we come together and decide we're going to learn together and that we're going to put aside our ideologies and we're going to bring with us our valuable points of view, but begin to map a path forward? And so that's complex long-term work. And one of the big, big challenges to systems change work is, in fact, that it takes time and people get impatient. And there are other pressures on us, like an election cycle or who's ever in office or people's attention spans. And so I think this is something that it's not just a New Mexico problem. It's a cultural problem in America that we don't have the discipline in some ways to look systemically at our most intractable problems and then make the hard sacrifices of time and resources to try to fix them.
I would think that when trying to address, let's just stay with education for a second, even the question of what methodologies you use to map that complex problem is a problem in itself.
Yes, but there is intelligence around this. There are, the corporate world takes advantage of that. The corporate world knows very well what markets are emerging, what consumer behavior is changing. Where future investments, might and should be. And they not only can create some good intelligence around that, not always reliable, but certainly reliable enough to make some decisions, they are also willing to experiment and take risks and to be often, be in a process, a continual process of learning. And it's not that we're not going to solve the education problem in one fell swoop. We will begin to hack away at the problem and then new realizations will emerge. We'll see things in new ways and then we'll have to adjust our course. And that's the kind of thinking society needs to advance itself. I personally think this is a perfect role for philanthropy, because we aren't tied to political agendas and we aren't tied to corporate interests. We are tied to the communities that fuel philanthropy. That's who we're held accountable to. And because we don't have the pressures or the constraints of a political system or a profit-driven system hanging over us, we can, in fact, invest in systems change from a place of objectivity, from a place of independence. And I think this is, and one of the reasons New Mexico suffers in some ways compared to other places is, in fact, we have less philanthropy here than other places. We don't have the kind of capital, independent capital, that can be invested in this kind of systems change. You look at the community foundations in New Mexico. There are five that are actively involved in what we call the coalition of community foundations. Ours, Albuquerque Community Foundation, Taos, New Mexico Community Foundation, and Southern New Mexico Community Foundation. Our joint assets, total assets, are about $150 million. I used to be the president of the Vermont Community Foundation, a state with 600,000 people, tiny little state, incredibly homogeneous place. Our assets for that one community foundation were $170, $175 million, and that was considered a smallish community foundation. So you realize we're the fifth largest state in the country. We have in a beautiful kind of diversity here that creates complexity for us as well. And we have, in some ways, a very small asset base of independent capital to put to work for us.
We're talking to Brian Burns, president of the Santa Fe Community Foundation. You talk about how philanthropy, private philanthropy, is independent from both corporate and government spheres. But as you also said before, that's where the money is and that's where the big influence
that's
is
right.
in the corporate and political spheres. Have you seen ways that philanthropy works with the public and with the for-profit private sector that are really effective?
Well, there are a lot of examples around the country. If you look at, I believe it was the Cincinnati Public Schools, a great public-private partnership that affected all kinds of policy change. I mean, these things can happen. The philanthropy, like I said earlier, philanthropy has to find the leverage points. And I make a distinction, I should tell you, between philanthropy and charity. Charity is the money that gets food on the food shelf today. It meets an immediate need. Philanthropy is the donated money that goes to affect systems. And it's highly strategic. And one of the challenges in society is that we have both short-term, urgent, immediate needs. People are starving today. And we have these very complex problems that have to be solved over long periods of time. Food distribution, hunger alleviation, those are complex problems. So one of the great challenges, I think, of leaders, both philanthropic leaders and as well as leaders from other sectors, is how do we make those decisions about how much to invest in alleviating an immediate need, and then how much do we have to redirect to those longer-term, more difficult problem-solving processes. And I think this is a great challenge, too. So, and any solution that we come up with will have to be one that we achieve together, where government, business, nonprofits, and philanthropy come together in some leveraged way. Every individual system has its characteristics, right? In the for-profit sector, innovation, product development, profit generation, those are strengths of that sector. In the governmental sector, creation of protective policy, that's what they do. But they're slow bureaucracies that affect that. Government can't usually act overnight. Like, they're just not as nimble. That's not what their strength is, but their strength is protective policy creation. The philanthropic sector can engage broad swatches of the community and give voice to people who are normally not in the system, as well as generate this independent capital. And we have to look in a strengths-based way at those three sectors and figure out how do we use all those strengths to advance success.
The Santa Fe Community Foundation has been around for quite a while. I know you're relatively new here. You've been in Santa Fe for a couple of years doing this, but looking over the history of this organization, of this foundation, what are some of the ways in which you think it's really best made a difference?
Yeah. I think, you know, some of the most inspiring stories of the foundation come from the very early years when a whole bunch of local people recognized the need for something like a community foundation, a place where people can pool their resources and shine, kind of attract attention to some of our big challenges. And some of those early donors, you know, they were doing things like bake sales and were deeply committed to building these assets and creating this institution. And they were brilliant and they had tremendous foresight and they were inspired. And many of them are still with us. You know, that was 30 years ago this past year. The Community Foundation has, I would say one of the things that it should be very proud of is that it has stimulated a culture of giving in this community. I think my predecessors, like Billy Blair, were really great at inspiring people to dig deep and to give. And she found ways to support a very broad range of organizations. She also, I think, developed a deep knowledge and helped our organization develop a deep knowledge of the nonprofit sector here and know who the players were and to develop strong relationships with them. In the last couple years since I've been here, we've taken kind of another leap. We've grown dramatically in the last 2 years, actually. We were at about $27 million in assets at the beginning of 2010, and now we're at $52 million, so we've nearly doubled.
What happened? Did you just do a ton of fundraising?
No, I think we worked on repositioning the organization a little bit and so that it became attractive to very large philanthropists. So we've begun to attract multi-million dollar gifts now. Our most recent two gifts were $4.5 million and $8 million gifts. And those are into new donor-advised funds. There are also some bequests coming in now, so people have left money, and those have been a million or two. We've begun to attract large national funding in a more aggressive way. It's been some repositioning. We purchased a building about 6 months ago right in downtown Santa Fe, and we created the Hub for Social Innovation there. And I think that helped raise our visibility a lot. And that's a place where people who are problem solvers in the community can come together and roll up their sleeves and either gain skills or come up with solutions or learn about new things. In the 4 months that we've been open, we've had well over 1,000 people use that space. So, all growth and is evolutionary, and we're trying to build on the real strengths of the organization in the past. One of the reasons I took the job, actually, because I saw enormous potential when I was interviewing. This is the smallest community foundation that I've run, but it was in some ways one of the most exciting. The board was thinking boldly about the future. They had the right mix of both wanting to preserve and conserve the assets and the history of the organization, but also they knew they were stepping up to a cliff moment in their history where they wanted to increase their impact and grow the organization significantly. And I really connected with that kind of bold courage. It was also a very financially strong institution. I think Billy left behind a really stable organization, and that's always a great platform to work from. And quite frankly, I think we have a very unique and beautiful community here of people who care, and that's a real asset to us.
So let's go back to this question of the community and what groups or organizations or sectors of the community have over the long run with this sort of strategic systemic way of thinking actually benefited. In other words, how is Santa Fe today a better community than it would have been without this foundation?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of mythology about the nonprofit sector here in Santa Fe. When I got here, a lot of people said to me, you know, Santa Fe has the largest percentage per capita number of nonprofits anywhere in the United States.
Right.
Well, in fact, that's not true.
It's not?
No.
Yeah, that's our mythology.
It is a mythology. And actually, every place I've lived always has that same mythology. They all say the same thing.
Really?
Yeah, there's
even
something
Vermont?
Funny. Vermont says it. Vermont actually is true.
Yeah.
Vermont does rank near the very top of per capita number of nonprofits. So I would say one of the things that's different in Santa Fe as a result of the Santa Fe Community Foundation is, in fact, we have a very strong network of nonprofits here. And that is critically important. So I want to kind of create a different narrative about what nonprofits do here. And I think that that's part of our legacy and what something we'll continue to do. So, for example, Santa Fe has about 6 nonprofits for every 1,000 people. That's about average in the United States. 6 nonprofits. When you take out the churches, it's 6 nonprofits for every 1,000 people. And yet, we rank 48th in itemized giving when you look at tax data. So how many itemized deductions do people take? You know, we're 48th in the country. So with 48th in itemized giving, we are about midway in supporting a nonprofit sector. That speaks to me of a kind of efficiency, I think. We also, let's look at it even from another way. When you look at foundation giving nationally, per capita, the average is $177 per person. So when you look at how much foundation giving happens in a community, it's about $177 per person in the community.
Giving to a foundation?
Yeah, for giving to nonprofits.
To a
giving to nonprofits.
Okay.
From foundations, okay? So a minute ago I talked about the itemized deduction on the IRS. This is about foundation giving. Foundation giving in New Mexico is about $34 per person, per capita. So you see that we rank way, way low. We are way below the national averages for a community that receives philanthropic dollars. And yet, we are maintaining a critically essential and critically important nonprofit sector that's about average in the United States. So to me, that speaks of a kind of efficiency in the nonprofit sector. We are doing a lot with very little. And that needs to be part of the new narrative, the nonprofit sector here. Not that we have so many nonprofits. The second thing I would say is we still have an enormous amount of unmet need. You know, we have most of our kids not graduating high school. We have people who live in abject poverty in this region. We have huge disparities in health outcomes for poor people versus the wealthy here. We are a very challenged place. And I would say it's largely through the nonprofit sector that those problems get solved. And if you were looking at it from a market-based perspective, the supply of nonprofits does not keep pace with the need of our communities. And that's not because of anything that's really wrong in the nonprofit sector. I think part of it is volume and scale. And then the third thing I would say about the nonprofit sector here is they are a critically important part of our local economy. And you don't create a nonprofit sector to create jobs. But, in fact, nonprofits do create jobs. So nonprofits here in Santa Fe create over 10% of the local workforce. Most of those people are women who are raising families. And we provide them with stable jobs and insurance benefits while they are doing great things for this community. So I would say one of the things we want to look to the Santa Fe Community Foundation for is how do we keep that nonprofit sector vibrant and alive and innovative and efficient and find even more efficiencies and continue to help it move closer to meeting these very challenging needs.
What are some of the favorite nonprofits that you see in Santa Fe that you think are really doing good things and that are beneficiaries of the Santa Fe Community Foundation funding?
Well, that's like asking a mom which of her children is the favorite. So we have many, many favorites. All of the organizations we grant to are certainly doing tremendous work, and we value them. And there are many, many, many that we can't grant to, that we just don't have enough money, that we would love to grant to, who also we also think are doing great work. So that said, you know, I think there are some organizations that are doing great work at pulling people together. You look at, in the youth realm, Big Brothers Big Sisters is doing tremendous work in connection with groups like Youth Works and the Santa Fe Mountain Center and the Youth Literacy Youth Media Project. You know, they're all coming together to think about their work. All of those and many others, the Boys and Girls Clubs are tremendously valuable organizations. You look at an organization like FACT, Fine Arts for Children and Teens, you know, they have strong leadership and talk about an efficient organization. And they're working in both Pueblo communities and local communities that are tremendously poor and where students don't have access to the arts but really need to. You look at Chain Breakers here in town, a little tiny grassroots organization that's putting people into bicycles affordably and, you know, reducing carbon emissions by getting them out of their cars. Great grassroots organization. Fabulous. Warehouse 21, you know, talk about a bold vision. Started a number of years ago really to create a place for our local youth to gather and to build community with one another. And, you know, these are hard times for many of these organizations financially. Public funding is drying up and decreasing. The philanthropic dollars harder to come by. We have to make sure we keep these organizations alive here. Solace, you know, another one. Esperanza Shelter, places where people go when their lives really are in peril. These are critically important institutions for this community, and they are under enormous strain.
Do you have ways of evaluating in the long run? I mean, again, it's one of the nice things about a foundation that goes on decade after decade is that you can look at something that was done 10, 15, 20 years ago and see what the fruits of it were. Do you have ways that you evaluate where your philanthropic dollar went and what good it did?
Yeah, and they're largely, you know, qualitative ways. So we don't have the kinds of resources to justify, you know, double-blind, randomized control studies that some place like the National Institutes of Health might do.
Right.
What we do is build strong, open, and honest relationships with our grantees so that we can speak honestly about what's happening. And that's a two-way conversation. You know, we as a foundation are not God. We don't have all the answers. It would be arrogant of us to think that we know how to run these organizations better than the people who run them. But we do want to be in a, you know, we also have an obligation to steward these resources in a very responsible way. So we are in relationship with our grantees. We create many opportunities to talk with them, to ask hard questions, to review their budgets, to review their strategies, to give recommendations. So, for example, whenever we make a grant out of our competitive grants programs, that organization's been visited by a team of people that include people from our board, sometimes some donors, staff people, volunteer, community volunteers, and we are looking at them in the context of their long history. How are things going there? Do we sense that they're an organization that continues to advance their work? Are they increasingly financially better run as time goes on? Those are all criteria that we use. So I think if you looked at our grants lists, you would see organizations that are high performers. And that's a pretty trustworthy list. We have long-term relationships with them.
One of the things that I think is very tricky is when you have an organization that's run by people who really see the need in the community. They may not be people who come from a place of knowing how to even just do their bookkeeping. So you've got organizations that overreach, you've got organizations that do a great job, but they're not fiscally responsible. Do you have, A, ways of evaluating that before you give somebody a grant, and B, ways of helping them so that they learn to do it better?
Yeah. Yes, on both of those accounts. It's one of the parts of our, you know, jargoned due diligence that we do with these organizations is to do a deep look at their financials. And we have people on our grants committee who are financial experts who look deeply. We also have people on our staff who do that work. And so we won't give a grant to an organization that's teetering. At the same time, their organizations need to adapt, and especially now that so much funding is drying up for them. We have organizations right now that are struggling with, how do I manage my cash flow? Should I start eating away at my endowment in order to stay alive? I have 50 more kids I need to feed in my food program. I can't turn them away. I need to use money from other resources to make that happen. And you're right, those are huge. Not everybody is fully skilled, you know, or they can't have the kind of team. So we provide training for organizations. We have financial oversight trainings at the Community Foundation. We're also right now trying to put together some effort to put a team of consultants together that could be deployed out to nonprofits that are struggling, and we're trying to find the resources, the money to do that. But we think if we could pull together a group of like circuit riders who an organization can call us up and say, hey, I see, you know, clouds on the horizon, we can then send them out and say, okay, let's do a quick look and assessment. Let's see how you can restructure your finances. Let's see what your ongoing fundraising needs are and what's realistic and what's possible. How do you manage your program growth? How might you restrict what you do? Like, I think that kind of technical assistance is critically needed, and we are the organization people should look for some of that help. We don't have other kinds of institutions that can do that. But it's an issue for us. We have to find the money to pay for that kind of work. It can be intense and expensive and tailored and personalized. But that's those are areas of our work that we're building out.
And it's interesting because when you think about how you get your money and when somebody makes a bequest, it's a very special kind of person who's going to make a bequest for technical assistance.
Yeah, they don't. By and large, they don't. Often people leave us money or give us money for very specific things, and that ties our hands. So we gave away $3 million last year. About $500,000 of that was money that we could give away through competitive processes. But very, very little of that total $3 million is completely unrestricted, you know, where we can really decide where to invest it. There are some kinds of restrictions on that money. And one of the things I would ask this community to do is to, in fact, increase the amount of unrestricted giving that it does. Organizations like ours need unrestricted money so that we can actually be nimble and meet the current needs of the community now and into the future. And those needs are always going to be changing.
Well, it's the same with, I mean, an organization like KSFR or indeed any nonprofit. There's somebody who wants to give them money to, let's say, build a building or do a specific program, but they don't want to give it for salaries.
Right. Well, I have to say one of the things that we're very proud of was a decision we made last year that all of the grants we give away through our competitive programs are unrestricted core operating grants. So whenever you get a competitive grant from the Community Foundation, it's to support your operations however you feel you need to support them. And I think that's, again, some of the innovation that our grants committees implemented in the last couple years, that we recognize that need. We have that need ourselves.
Brian Burns, I was looking at your own background, and you have degrees in philosophy and theology and music, including medieval early music. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that and how you got from there to philanthropy and if those things are related for you.
You know, you only see the thread when you look at it in retrospect, right? You never know what it looks like when you're going forward.
They
are kind of tied together. I'm a philosopher at heart, I think. I love concept, but it's concept grounded in social action for me. That's been a real theme. I really believe so much of the ways to make progress going forward is by conceptually understanding what's happening. Without concept, you don't have anything. So I've always been a little philosophical. I love that. On the other hand, I love the humanities, and I think they are the picture of our culture. And so by studying philosophy and music and musicology, it gives us a sense of the human soul, what really motivates us at our deepest levels. And that's what motivates me about community philanthropy, even as you get to work with people at the soul level on both sides of the equation, these beautiful philanthropists who want to do good in the world and these amazing and courageous nonprofit leaders who have committed everything to do it. And you know, like I said earlier, I think that's really the only thing that changes the world is that kind of passion. That kind of hope, that kind of courage. And so, yeah, I have a background in things where I've tried to touch our, you know, humans' greatest creations, I think, which are ways of thinking and ways of seeing the world. Theology is a search for meaning, you know. It's how do we make sense of this crazy world we live in? And theology helped me do that. Music touched me with... got me in touch with the great creative spirit that exists in all of us. And I think those are the skills that make the world better. Those are the things that make the world better. So, yeah.
Especially in terms of music, I think those are the... When you think about... I was thinking if I were to be a world traveler and go to all kinds of places where I didn't speak the language, what would I want? And I think what I would want is to be a musician.
Yeah.
And have a little portable instrument, not a church organ, yeah. But, you know, something you can carry in your suitcase and meet people and play music, because that's the thing that connects us all.
Yeah, creativity. It's a wonderful thing.
Brian Burns, anything else you want to let us know before we go?
Yeah, I'd like to know some things that are coming up for the Community Foundation. First of all, if you're looking to bring people together and make good things happen, call us at the Community Foundation and perhaps we can host your group and get to know what you're doing in the community. And you can find us on the website at santafecf.org. Also, on June 23rd, we have a wonderful event coming up that, in fact, does raise that kind of unrestricted money that we were talking about earlier.
Uh-huh.
It's called the Guess Who's Coming to Dinner event, and it's presented by our lead sponsor, Avalon Trust. And this is a great, wonderful, creative event where you're going to get to go have dinner with someone that you haven't met before, and you don't even know who it is yet. And
uh-huh.
That night, you're going to be surprised by the wonderful people you'll get to meet at that dinner. And it'll be at someone's home, hosted at a wonderful home in Santa Fe. Again, you won't even know the host till right before. So if you'd like to come to that event and support the Community Foundation and get to meet lots of new friends, go to the website and at the Community Foundation, you can find your way to it.
Brian Burns is president and CEO of the Santa Fe Community Foundation. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.